Good afternoon. Today I'm announcing an initial support package for Christchurch following last week's major earthquake. I'd like to make something clear before I begin. This package is just the beginning of what will be a long haul to get our second largest city back on its feet. The government is committed to doing everything we can to support the recovery and rebuilding of Christchurch. The package I'm announcing today is designed to get people through the next 6 weeks as the government considers what measures will be needed in the medium term. Cabinet had originally considered a 4-week package, but on reflection today, given the scale and severity of the earthquake, we've decided to make it for 6 weeks so we can use the next 5 weeks to carefully develop policies for the next step. Today's earthquake assistance package comes in two parts: an earthquake support subsidy to help employers keep paying wages, and the earthquake job loss cover, which will support employees whose employer believes their business is no longer viable. Firstly, I'd like to deal with the earthquake support subsidy. You'll remember we implemented a program with the same name following the Canterbury earthquake in September last year. This time the criteria for the subsidy are wider, reflecting the greater severity of last week's earthquake. Last time the subsidy was just for small businesses. This time it might be easier to consider which businesses are not eligible rather than which ones are. In terms of the businesses that are not eligible, they are multinationals or nationwide chains, those that have insurance cover, and central and local government. Outside of those, any business will be eligible, which means there will be some large local employers. The earthquake support subsidy will provide employers with a contribution to help them keep paying wages while they consider the future of their businesses. Eligible employers will receive a payment of $500 per week per full-time employee and $300 per week for part-time employees. After tax, this is the minimum amount that needs to be passed on to the employee, and it's our hope that where companies are in a financial situation to do so, they will maintain paying the full salaries of their staff. The subsidy is designed to keep businesses connected with their staff during the 6-week period after the earthquake. It's about keeping people in jobs and supporting businesses as they look to recover and regroup. The second part of the package is the earthquake job loss cover, which is a new program. It's designed to provide support to workers whose employer believes their business is no longer viable. There will also be cases where employees cannot get hold of their employer and therefore do not know what their future holds. The earthquake job loss cover is able to cover these circumstances. A full-time worker eligible for the earthquake job loss cover will receive $400 in the hand per week to help them transition to either finding another job or seeking other welfare assistance. In the case of the part-time worker, the payment would be $240 per week in the hand. I'd like to encourage employers, where possible, to attempt to contact their employees to discuss arrangements with them for the next few weeks. Keeping this important employment relationship going is hugely important. These payments made under the earthquake job cover are universal, they are not means tested, and they are available immediately. Like the earthquake support subsidy, they apply to companies and people who operate in the Christchurch City Council boundaries. I would note that there are some workplaces now operating in Christchurch, and I'd like to encourage people, where possible, to go back to work if they can. Where their workplace is safe and their family is safe, the biggest contribution people can make to the recovery is by going back to work. I'd also like to encourage people who want to access these two programs I've announced today to phone Work and Income where possible or to use the internet if they can rather than walk into the local office. I say this because Work and Income is just one of many agencies that's been affected by the earthquake and is operating on reduced capacity in the area. However, extra resources from around the country are being made available to help on Work and Income phone lines. So I'd like to encourage people to call the number, which is 0800 77 997, 0800 77 997. We've made the support package as simple and pragmatic as possible so that it can be delivered quickly and reach the people who urgently need it. Because of the number of people this package is likely to affect and the speed with which we have put it together, we have cut through much of the red tape that would normally be associated with this type of policy. But I would caution people applying for the two programs that we will be using IRD data matching as we go, and people's application must be bona fide in nature. I want to say to employers and employees who are in the position of feeling like they need help to please call the number I have given. If you're worried that you may not meet the criteria for these programs, please make that call and discuss your situation. Exceptions will be considered by Work and Income on a case-by-case basis, and it's my expectation that we will err on the side of generosity when looking at these issues. It's difficult to estimate the total cost of this package because of the number of affected businesses is uncertain. Based on initial estimates for the six-week period, on the best information we have, there are approximately 210,000 employees in the catchment area for which the package may apply to around about 20% of them. In that case, there would be around 42,000 people caught by the package, and we would be looking at a cost of around $100 to $120 million. It's worth contrasting that with the first earthquake support subsidy from last year, which ended up having a total cost of $10.7 million. Obviously, the cost will rise if the package has a higher take-up rate and the government is prepared to meet that cost. I'm advised that already civil defence payments worth just over $3 million have been paid out for a variety of things, including food, clothing, bedding and accommodation. In terms of the broader impact of the earthquake on both the Canterbury economy and the national economy, I'd like to reaffirm our commitment to provide whatever financial resources are necessary to help to rebuild Christchurch and the Canterbury economy. The earthquake's effects will be felt for many years to come, but the government will provide the financial resources needed in both the short and longer term. Supporting and rebuilding Christchurch are among the most important things the government will be doing this year and into the future. The Treasury has provided us with a preliminary estimate of the earthquake's cost and economic impact, and it suggests that the total cost of the damage from the earthquake is likely to be in the order of $10 to $15 billion, or put another way, 2 to 3 times the $5 billion estimated cost of the first earthquake. So at this stage, the likely combined cost of the two earthquakes is in the order of $20 billion. But you'll appreciate we're at a very early stage of assessment. Yesterday I launched the Christchurch Earthquake Appeal to reach out to people who want to donate money to help Christchurch. We're going to use the full force of the government's networks to reach around the world and to make it easy for people to help. The appeal is designed to sit alongside those already run by organisations such as the Red Cross and the Salvation Army. We'll be working with these types of agencies to ensure that the money raised is used in the best way it can be. New Zealanders and people in other countries can make a donation by going to www.christchurchearthquakeappeal.govt.nz. In New Zealand, people can also donate by going into a branch of Westpac. People can go into any branch of another retail bank and make a deposit, provided they have the appeal bank account number, which is on the website. Telecom, Vodafone New Zealand and 2 Degrees Mobile customers can text CHCH to 933 to make an automatic $3 donation. Finally, I'll be travelling to Christchurch again tomorrow, where I'll observe 2 minutes silence at 12:51 along with the rest of the country. I'll be joined at that time by my wife Brona, who as you know was born and grew up in Christchurch. This is a time when the country will want to come together and pay our respects to those families who have lost loved ones who are suffering as a result of the earthquake. So in that context, it will be particularly important for me too to be with my family as well. These 2 minutes of silence are a sign of unity for the people of Canterbury and a chance for all New Zealanders to show that we grieve alongside them. Questions? Yes, so it's our expectations that the nature of any future support is likely to change, but we can't rule out that this package or a form of this package will be extended into the future. We know that there are some businesses in the CBD period that will be off limits for a period of time likely to be longer than 6 weeks, or some individuals that simply won't be able to find work. But this is The idea of this is, A, to put money immediately into people's pockets, give them some confidence, and also give us a chance to frame up the policies that we think are important as we go to the next stage of helping the recovery effort in Christchurch.
So it's not as though after that six-week period
No. I mean, the difference here with this package, the way to think about this is a non-means tested universal payment to anybody whose company has essentially failed. The only companies that are outside this are multinationals, where we believe they've got the financial wherewithal to look after their own staff, companies that are nationwide in nature, or frankly government departments, also quasi-government departments. And even in the case of a nationwide chain, if they were, for instance, an owner-operator franchise, then we'll almost certainly entertain making payments there as well. So it's a very universal scheme. We didn't discuss those today, no.
Do you think it's likely, I know you've been asked a number of times, but do you think it's likely that we're going to
employ the Well, I think it's almost guaranteed that the EQC levy will go up. And the early indications are double to triple the existing levy is likely to be the sort of order of magnitude that will allow us to restore a healthier balance to the EQC fund. I think it's less likely that we'll put on another levy on top of that. And if you look at the initial estimates from Treasury, they are saying around about $20 billion worth of cost of these earthquakes. I think we've got around about $15 billion that we've provisioned. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't going to be an impact on the Crown accounts. There absolutely will be, and you'll see that now show up in the May budget accounts. And that comes from a variety of different factors. But I'm reluctant to put another levy on unless I have to, because I think it'll slow the economy down.
Does that mean that the Crown is
Correct. That's likely to be the case. I mean, it'll vary. It could be paid out over a considerable period of time. You appreciate that the rebuilding will take quite some time. What will knock our accounts around in May is a number of factors. One, tax revenue will be lower, could be considerably lower in the May accounts because of the reduced economic activity in Christchurch. Secondly, this package alone is in the magnitude of, best estimate, $120 million. There'll be other packages, so it'll be hundreds of millions of dollars that will be unanticipated costs. And the other thing is, as we go about supporting infrastructure rebuild in Christchurch, normally it's sort of a 50-50 joint venture with the local ratepayer. We can't expect local ratepayers to meet that bill in Christchurch.
Would you consider applying the levy in a different way? At the moment it's just private insurance, or people with private insurance who pay it. Could you look at pulling it out?
Yeah, we haven't at this stage. I mean, ultimately, the economics of this would tell you eventually it feeds into rents and the likes. So we haven't considered that, and I don't think it's likely, but look, in due course, we can always consider those factors. I mean, we will need to consider wider issues about EQC and its rules and regulations, how it works, and whether its cover's wide enough, but that's part of time for a wider review.
Could you also consider other things mentioned perhaps by the Tax Working Group last year as a way of getting more revenue? Such as the capital gains tax now, does that bring that back into the open?
No, I don't think that's on the cards as a result of this.
What's the government considering about long-term incentives to keep businesses in Christchurch? The CBD's going to be out of action for a long time, and people may choose not to do businesses there. Is the government considering incentives to get people to go down there and maintain business?
Yeah, so again, that's the sort of thinking that will need to go into phase two, if you like. The initial phase that we're announcing today is aimed at trying to shore up the relationship between employers and employees, where they think there's a reasonable chance the business can carry on, but it's clearly been interrupted as a result of the earthquake. And then secondly, where there is no chance of the business relationship being maintained, the employee getting a payment straight away. But we need to move to the next phase, which is how you generate economic activity, and that's what we'll work on over the next 5 weeks.
There have been some reports in Japanese media about concerns that the authorities might have had about the language school and CTV building.
Yeah.
Was there any contact to the New Zealand government or city council as far as you're aware about that?
Look, not as far as I'm aware. The building, and I don't have the details of that, but the building will have been checked by the Christchurch City Council or an engineering firm contracted by the Christchurch City Council. So EQC, after the September 4th quake, was responsible for houses. The council's responsible for buildings. Look, in due course, we will need to consider what sort of investigation is appropriate, given or inquiry is appropriate as a result of the earthquake. I've asked for advice on that, but I haven't seen any advice back yet.
So you haven't had any information that people had gone back into buildings, for example, that hadn't been deemed safe?
No, I don't have any advice on that.
Has the government given any consideration to a special earthquake bond to help cover the shortfall?
Again, haven't had any advice on that. I mean, the Treasury is now going away looking at all of the levers they have available to them, what they think the likely cost is, firming things up in terms of what our options are. But it's very early days, and Minister of Finance hasn't been presented any information on that, as far as I'm aware.
What impact does this have on a couple of other policy areas the government is looking at? State sector reform being one of them. Can you go ahead with those reforms given commitments that are going to be needed in Christchurch?
In my view, yes. I mean, the areas that we were working on, welfare reform and state sector reform, were medium to long-term issues about driving greater efficiency and better outcomes, and they're as relevant today as they were back then. But obviously, ministers are fairly focused on what's happening, or extremely focused on what's happening in Christchurch, so some of that work is being delayed in meetings we would have held. But in principle, the same. We believe the same long-term issues present themselves, and we need to address those.
How about the area of savings and investment budget? Is that still going to be the main thing?
You ask a good question there. I mean, savings and investment is very important, and I have no doubt that will be a core part of the budget. But I think you've got to expect also the rebuild of Christchurch now taking an important part of the budget's focus. So, I mean, in a way, the way I would sort of describe it is building for the future. So it's building our savings pool, but also rebuilding Christchurch.
Can you tell us what Cabinet decided in terms of...
Sorry, Rob.
Supplementary, Rob.
But doesn't give you less room to play with, but on the savings investment side, if you're having to...
It may or may not. We can't answer that, say, because we don't know. What it is likely to do is have an impact on when we return to surpluses, what spare capacity we have. We didn't think we had a lot of spare capacity before we started this process. I mean, there's no getting away from the fact this is an enormous impact beyond our control or expectation. So that is going to have some impact on our Crown accounts. But we'll have to get some advice on that.
So, can you fill us in on what the Cabinet discussed today in terms of some of those issues you outlined in the paper this morning, the CBD, a possible alternative, the extra housing, possibly some new subdivisions?
Yeah, so again, very general discussion there. I mean, nothing specific at this point. I mean, the housing minister is working, and building and housing are working on alternatives to try and accommodate people. We think there are a substantial number of homes that are going to be destroyed as a result of and demolished as a result of the earthquake. So we need to look at those alternatives, and they're working on that. And formalised proposals weren't brought to Cabinet. There was a general discussion about that. In terms of the CBD, I mean, that's very early days. I mean, essentially, Mr Brownlee just gave us an overview of, you know, what's going to happen next, and that is, as we work through the rescue and ultimately recovery phase, then we will have to, I think, deal fairly quickly with the demolition of those buildings that are condemned. From there, there are a wide range of issues. You'd appreciate that ultimately the rebuilding is a very complex issue, but it's going to present a lot of questions will need to be answered, and some of those by central government, some ultimately by the people of Christchurch.
Does that include moving the CBD?
Well, we haven't had any discussions on that, and I mean, I would have thought that's frankly fairly unlikely, but look, I'm not the expert in the matter.
What's going to happen around reviews of building laws, particularly around earthquake scrutiny? Does the government have any intention of looking at that issue?
So eventually those questions about whether we believe the current building code in New Zealand is adequate will need to be answered, and I'd expect in any form of inquiry that question would be posed. That said, I mean, buildings that we can just observe anyway with our naked eye that have been built in recent times seem to have held up well in the earthquake. Clearly these buildings, which are causing tremendous concern and are likely to have caused significant loss of life, were built either in the 60s or 70s. So I wouldn't want to prejudge the outcome of that. We need to answer that question. But you know, it certainly appears those modern buildings have held up well.
You mentioned as well you wanted to spend time with your family.
Yep.
Does that include your sister, and how is she holding up?
Yeah, so look, I've spoken to her on a number of occasions, and I'm not quite sure where she'll be tomorrow. I might give her a call, but because I'll be in the cordon, I'm likely to be at the CBD building. It's very difficult for her to come into the cordon. You know, for her, it's been quite tough because in the first earthquake, she had some damage to her home. In the second earthquake, it's highly likely her property will need to be demolished. And she's lost a couple of friends that she's aware of, so it's a very difficult time for her. But that's going to be true, sadly, for an enormous number of people in Christchurch.
You cancelled one of your European trips.
Yep.
What sort of consideration have you given to your attendance to the royal wedding?
Yes, I was due, although we hadn't officially announced it, to go to the Moscow next week to try and advance the FTA and then to pay a visit on the Queen at Buckingham Palace and go to see David Cameron and Nicolas Sarkozy and then over to Brussels. That trip's been cancelled. At this point, you know, we've accepted the invitation to go to the royal wedding, and if possible, I'd like to attend, but that's always subject to domestic pressures.
Have you been talking about the May budget? No discussion about pushing that out at all?
No, I don't think that. In fact, if anything, it's probably more important that you know, the focus is on that.
You talked about perhaps getting to surface a bit later. Do you have an idea of when that would be?
I don't have any. I haven't seen the Treasury advice that the Finance Minister's received, but I don't think he's kept up to date information on that. They're modelling it. One of the problems, of course, is that it's still very early days for them to get an exact picture of what, you know, how this will impact on things. But I know they are modelling it very carefully.
What updates did you get on the presumption of basic services in Christchurch? I'm thinking of power and water and sewage.
Yeah.
You have some main implications of weeks, but is there anything more concrete you can tell us, particularly those that power is awaiting to go back?
Yes, I think in the case of power, the situation is looking very optimistic. So it's on to, I think it's about 80%, 75, 80% of homes, but likely to be around about 90-odd percent in the very foreseeable future. So Orion have been working hard at the new cables they've rolled out. Water is coming back. I think two-thirds of the city now has water, and again, we're working on that aggressively. Sewage is still our main issue, but there's a lot of either port-a-loos or chemical toilets and things coming in from overseas. So, I mean, I think we're making actually very good progress given the severity of the situation, but that's obviously our main priority, and without that, we just can't get kids back to school and things.
What's your advice about liquefaction in terms of, does that proceed? Does that, you know, how does that pan out later on, you know, if the streets are still filled with water and sewage, how do you deal with it?
Yeah, so I'm not the expert in it, but it seems to me, just from what I can see, that the liquefaction causes obviously the sand to rise and it dries hard on the surface, and so it needs to remove that silt. We think there's about five times as much as there was in the first earthquake, so it's a large amount that needs to be removed. What impact that has on some of the very badly affected areas in the first earthquake and now have been very badly affected again, like Bexley, I'm not sure, but we're having to get some geotechnical advice there.
So there may well have to be look at, you know, the future of those suburbs, especially after the second time.
Yeah, so one of the things that was likely to emerge from the first earthquake, if there hadn't been a second earthquake, is that more houses would have been demolished than people may have thought, not because the house itself was damaged beyond repair, but the land that was adjoining that needed to be strengthened and stabilised. And that we've now got a situation where liquefaction areas are much greater as a result of this earthquake, much, much greater. And so we just need to work our way through those issues and check the responses that we think are appropriate. And at this stage, and we just haven't had advice on that.
How many people have bailed out of Christchurch in the rest of the
Well, tens of thousands. We know Air New Zealand moved, I think, by Friday, 14,500 people just on its flights. We've been evacuating people. An enormous number of people would have driven out of the city. I honestly don't know. Your guess would be as good as mine, but it would be 30, 40, 50,000. That sort of number.
And given how many houses are presumably now sitting empty and some of them won't be secure, are you confident that there is enough in terms of police presence and other security arrangements in place?
Yes, yeah, so there's a very large police presence. I mean, we have, I can probably tell you exactly if I look for 2 seconds. Well, we have over 320 police officers from Australia alone. I think there's about 900 locally, and I can get the exact number for you. There's a large number, but the answer is, look, we are concerned where there have been, you know, relatively isolated cases of looting and people taking advantage of the situation. quite frankly, it's disgraceful behaviour when people engage in that, and they should be dealt with very harshly by the authorities if people engage in preying on people in when they are most vulnerable. But for the most part, you know, there's so many police in the CBD area that at least that we know that part of the city is secured.
Have you given any thought to maybe organising a register that people can record that their houses are empty and they can get special attention from the police? Some streets seem to be empty almost.
Yeah, and that's because certain streets have been evacuated, for instance, and Redcliffs, I think, have had a lot of homes where people have just been forced to move out. I'll go and check that, exactly what extra precautions the police are taking. I mean, you'll appreciate a lot of what they're doing at the moment is really trying to focus very clearly on their big effort to try and work through the rescue and recovery. But, personal property is obviously very important to people.
Do you have any better idea of the foreign national tally?
I don't know the number there, I'm sorry. Look, I mean, the best I have is 148 confirmed fatalities, and we're working our way through the missing list. We've been having discussions with the police about that, but it's in their hands.
Were you suggesting there might be an inquiry into how the CGB and PGC buildings got a warrant of fitness when they were clearly structurally damaged?
All I can say at this stage is that we need to get... Firstly, this is an event which has claimed the loss of many, many people, and so we need to provide some answers to that, both within those buildings where there's been large loss of life, the wider issues around the adequacy of the building code, and so I've asked for advice on what is the appropriate forum for that inquiry and how it might work, and I haven't received that advice back yet, but I'm expect to be in a position to at least understand that and comprehend that advice or consider that advice for the middle to latter part of the week.
So both those buildings got a warrant of fitness after the last quake. How can anyone have confidence in the tick-off that will come for the high-rise in the next month or two?
Yeah, so you ask a fair question, and the answer is we will want to get some immediate information on those buildings, and I think the Department of Building and Housing have been undertaking some immediate work there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that would satisfy the full extent of any inquiry that I might want to commission.
So are you saying there will be an inquiry?
And just yes, there will be an inquiry. There has to be an inquiry. I mean, we have to provide answers to people about why so many people lost their lives, and we have to learn lessons from the earthquake. Now, some things may be just beyond our control. This is an act of nature and it's had a devastating effect, but we owe it to those people to give them answers of what went wrong, and we'll do that in due course.
Could there be some questions of fairness about government employees retaining their full salaries and
workers? The reality is that if you work for the government, more often than not there's job security, because you know your employer is always going to pay, for instance. It's not security you get in the private sector. Often there's a trade-off in terms of income and other opportunities, so there's always a trade-off. What you can say is that I think we're trying to be as fair as we can with this package. I mean, if you contrast this to someone who's lost their job, they're going to get $400 a week in the hand. That's more than the unemployment benefit by some margin. The unemployment benefit is means-tested. There's no stand-down period. So I think we're doing the best we can in difficult circumstances to provide a universal payment to a large subset of people from the Christchurch area.
Do you have any estimates of how many people we need to rehouse?
Look, someone vaguely said to me there was about 3,300 houses that were likely to be demolished as a result of the first earthquake, and top of the sort of back of the envelope was double that for this one, but no one's got an exact number yet.
Is it realistic to think that more survivors are likely to be found at this stage? As
every day goes by, it's more challenging, but we can't give up hope. Miracles do happen. And the advice I had from the medical staff on the ground at the urban search and rescue teams is that it is possible for someone to last sort of 7 to 9 days. Now, internationally, we've seen miracles where people last a lot longer. Depends on the circumstances, but in general, I think they have grave concerns beyond 7 to 9 days.
Are you satisfied that the police are acting speedily enough in releasing bodies? And also, is there any reason why they can't release the names of the missing?
In terms of the latter issue, the names of the missing, we've been having some discussions with them today, and we're trying to seek a resolution to that issue as quickly as we can. There are... I mean, there are privacy issues, but we need to try and cut through those if we possibly can. In terms of the first issue, again, we've been in discussions with police to make sure that they are satisfied they have all of the personnel required to help them through this process, which is very challenging for them. We've had a lot of offers of international support, and we've made it quite clear we're happy to offer, accept those offers of international support. Again, it's a difficult situation because of the nature of the earthquake and the terrible impact it's had on the victims.
Yeah, it's a situation where sometimes the family, immediate family, know that this person's died, and they've told the media and they've discussed it with people, and yet the name can't be released from that. How do we get to that situation? Is that acceptable?
Well, it sounds a bit farcical, but I accept that that's happening, and that's one of the reasons I've raised it on a couple of occasions, including this morning.
But I'm not being too cautious.
I don't want to criticise them. They're doing their very, very best, and there's a combination of different agencies here. It's not just solely the police, actually, in their defence. But we're trying to cut through that issue as fast as we possibly can.
How can police and officials get help from the public in locating missing people if the names of those missing people aren't out there for that help to come in?
Yeah, so effectively, if you think about how that missing list has been put together, it's a combination of people ringing in to say my loved one went off to work or went out to do some activity during the day and haven't returned. So it's driven by a family member ringing through or a friend ringing through. The second way is that in the case of the international students, we have a fairly clear idea of the number of people that were attending those classes. It's not absolutely perfect, but we're pretty sure we know who was there. So that's how we've put together the list. And I think if you've been missing for a period of time, effectively, unless you live alone, it's highly likely that someone has been in contact with the police. Even if you do live alone, I'm sure a neighbour or something would have rung in. So we effectively are using the public. But the question is whether there's a wider public interest in the names of the missing. And I think the answer is there is. And so we need to try and get that list in the public domain.
Are you satisfied that civil defence's response in the suburbs in particular was swift enough and thorough enough? Because we've been getting anecdotal criticisms from people saying no Waterloos in our street. You saw it on the television the other night.
Yeah.
We've seen no officials in our street beyond a few students digging up some liquefaction.
Yeah, so my view is yes, in the sense that the enormity of the situation means that they've had to prioritise. And because of the devastation on a number of buildings and quite a wide number of sites in the CBD, obviously the urban search and rescue people have focused in that area. There's no question there's substantial damage to those properties in the suburbs, and some people have lost their lives, but that's been an easier position to identify. We do ask those people for patience. We appreciate the stress that they're going through, and we are doing everything we can. But this is something which is stretching our resources to breaking point.
Well, this may have been asked, what if, for the job loss cover, what if they've left Christchurch?
Yeah, so if they left Christchurch, they're still eligible. So imagine a scenario where you worked for a small business. Small business is no longer going to be in operation. You'll be eligible. And obviously if your businesses can't operate because, you know, it's an intention to restart at some point, but again, they can't operate, then CBD, again, you'll be eligible.
How much has government discovered that Statistics New Zealand had quite a substantial operating base in the CBD?
Yeah.
What other government departments have been affected in some sort of
thing? Yeah, so ACC, I think, has been pretty substantially affected. IRD is caught within the cordon. I think education has a number of offices there. Work and Income have lost a number of offices. They're increasing their numbers again. So there's been quite a number of government departments that are affected.
How much support have the international funds so far as financially, and what's
the thing you're going to publicise? Yeah, so it's very early days because there's a lot of money that's going to come into the fund that actually sort of effectively hasn't hit the bank account yet. I mean, I know one organisation, I'll leave it to them, but they did a fundraiser on Friday night and they raised $1.5 million. I was at a function last night, which was meant to be a Chinese celebration for New Year, but they turned it into a fundraiser and raised $200,000. So there's lots of money there. In terms of the worldwide promotion, so we're doing a number of things. Tomorrow I'm going to spend effectively from the first 3 hours of tomorrow with the international media. So trying to promote the fund on all the Australian talk shows, breakfast shows, radio shows, all of that sort of thing, and ultimately to the United States. We're talking to a couple of the global consulting and accounting firms to see whether we can tap into their global database. We've got some ideas around some very, very high net worth individuals who might have a reason to want to support New Zealand. Obviously, we're trying to work with the phone companies to see whether that texting can, messaging can be made available in other countries like Australia and the US and the UK. We're going to reach out to the expat network that New Zealand has. A million Kiwis live overseas. So, I mean, look, in the end, our ambition is to raise a large amount of money, and I think that's actually quite possible. I know all of those things are happening. They're trying to work on that, and we're hopeful that they'll support us.
So you have been asked by...
Our people have been in discussions with their producers. Where that goes, I don't know, but look, if we can get them even just... I don't need to go on the show, but if we can get them to promote that, that is likely to have a very big impact. But, I mean, put it in perspective. Roughly, this is about... if this is a sort of $15 billion cost, this is about, 7 or 8% of GDP. Hurricane Katrina was 1%. So this is somewhere in the order of 5 to 8 times more significant to the New Zealand economy in a financial impact than arguably Hurricane Katrina. It's considerably bigger than the Victorian bushfires in terms of financial impact. Now, obviously, an enormous number of people lost their lives in those events. We're not trying to diminish that in any way. But for New Zealand, a small country, it's has quite a big impact.
The global appeal, I'm sure, is for the people of Christchurch
rather
than the government coffers.
Absolutely, totally for the families. So the money is to be used for hardship for the families and businesses as they rebuild, services we think can support the people of Christchurch, and we'll need to consider, but one idea is possibly whether it's used in any form for an iconic building or something, potentially the rebuild of Christchurch Cathedral if that was required, depending on what their insurance provisions and things are.
Do you have a goal amount?
It's hard to know. I mean, Australia raised $390 million for the Victorian bushfires, approximately, 392, I think, to be precise. They have a wider audience, so, I mean, there's 20-odd million people, but, this is quite big numbers, isn't it? I mean, if we get 10% of Australians to give, $2 million, $100 each would be $200 million Australian dollars. It's a lot of money, and there's a lot of Australians. I mean, the Anzac spirit is alive and well. They believe in New Zealand, and I think they can see the devastation that's taken place. So, and then we'll just do our best and see how it goes. The in terms of Lotto on Saturday night, you're aware that half of all the ticket proceeds are going to the fund. Again, we don't know how much that will bring in, but we're actually encouraging people to buy lotto tickets. We're not encouraging them to gamble per se, but we're encouraging them to buy lotto tickets. And who knows, any number's possible, but it's not impossible that sort of $10, $15 million goes into the fund, maybe more.
You said that this will be the first of some
sectors.
What is the
last question?
Sure,
what's
sorry.
The next step that the government's going to take in terms of looking at systems? You've got past the... Initial employee.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, providing an operating environment for businesses to get back on their feet, both temporarily and for the longer term. So that's where the focus has got to be. I mean, in the end, this is a income support package for businesses to pay their employees and for individuals that have lost their jobs. But in the end, a vibrant city provides jobs for their people. And this is a broken city, but one that we need to repair. And we need people to be able to go back to work. And that's going to take some time, but we need to work on that. Thanks very much.